During our announcements this morning, it was announced that thank you that there were no anniversaries this week, but there are three anniversaries coming up on the end of the week. It may not be what would qualify for this listing, but does anybody know? I know there's a handful that know. I've already talked to some. Does anybody know what three anniversaries are happening at the end of the week? Would you repeat that? Okay, on Saturday will be the anniversary of three people who have finished their race. And it is the anniversary of their finish. Desi Sorensen, Larry George, and my dad all died on December 19th. And I asked Allison, told me, I couldn't remember whether Larry died 1 year or 2 years before my dad, but she said this will be 10 years now since Larry died, and that doesn't seem possible. It's been 8 years since my dad died. And Pam said that Desi died in 2010. And so, in my mind, these should be celebrated because they accomplished what they began their life wanting to do, was finishing the race for the Lord. So, whether you say they got their wings, they got the reward, or they finished the race, it is something to reflect on, to be happy for. So, who are our ancestors of the church? Oftentimes, I've heard it defined as those who have gone on before us. So, if that is the definition, isn't it accurate to say that Junior, who is not a member as long as many of us here, is now an ancestor of the church? As Junior has run his race, he has finished it and got his reward. I have thought of Junior every day. Since his passing, and a lot of it is because it was such a shock to me, because Mom and I had went to see Junior in the hospital. And I thought, it's a perfect place for Junior to be. They'll take care of him. And but it wasn't meant to be. And it's just like the day I heard about Larry George having his accident. That was such a shock to me. I remember the job that I was on. I think Pam was the one that called me to tell me that Larry had had an accident. And so when Mom and I had left the hospital and we thought Junior was okay, well, he is okay. He's just not here. Because Junior accepted the Lord into his life. Junior's okay. And that is the thing we have to remember. And I thought John Lee started the funeral out in a good way. I miss Junior. Because that is something that I think we can all relate to. So the first few minutes of my talk here, I want to make mention of some of the things that struck me with him. And Junior is proof that you don't have to be the song leader, you don't have to be the reader, you don't have to be the speaker to be a very valuable member of this church. Junior added a lot. So it should be proof that there are things that every one of us can do. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female, you can be a very valuable part of the Lord's church. So if you never took time to spend with Junior, you cheated yourself. Junior was never scheduled on the program to be the speaker, but he presented so many lessons to us anyway, even though we never scheduled him. He gave us lessons in other ways. He knew he had limitations, but he also knew there were plenty of other things that he could do. To get involved and to be a part of an active church without having his name on the program. I don't know what all Junior did, but he did the work of a deacon without officially being one. I know he helped Linda over at Newton with her house. I know he helped with the electric downstairs, and we know what he did whenever we had get-togethers with providing coolers and drinks and barbecues and showing us what a real tossed salad should really look like. And I know he was a help to Jolene and probably many others. I know he loaned vehicles to Ryan Needham, and I don't even have a clue what else he did, but I know he was just like a hawk setting up on a pole waiting to see if he could find somebody else that he could give assistance to in whatever way he had available. I do know that Junior realized God had blessed him with a really good paying job, and he knew he didn't have a family to raise and support, and he decided to adopt us and make us his family. He was good at observing people going through life and seeing people in life that he could help. And as was mentioned at his funeral, if he seen somebody he thought he could help, he would make them his project. Now, even though he wasn't scheduled to be a speaker, about 3 months ago, we had an open meeting on a Sunday afternoon. And Tom had got up here, and I don't know that Tom said one thing that was wrong, but he talked about animals, and the Bible talks about the spirits of animals being different than the spirit that humans are given, and there were some other things that evidently struck Junior that he was sure that wasn't Junior's dog named Jake. I come away from that day thinking that Junior probably thought that if Jake had been here, Jake might have taken offense to what Tom said. And so Junior doesn't normally ever get up at an open meeting. But Junior got up out of his seat as soon as Tom started back down. And he says, "I'm telling you, it takes a lot. I mean, it takes a lot to make me get up here." But he had to defend the animal rights. And so Junior got up to give us his 2 cents worth, and we got quite a bit more than that. But it was fun to hear him feel comfortable getting up before us. And he presented his thoughts, and I don't know that he even stuttered one time. Maybe he did, but he did a very good job of presenting his thoughts. And I told him afterwards that after that we was going to have to put him on the program because he done a good job of saying what was on his mind. He made difficult times bearable because he shared other people's burdens. And isn't that what Christianity is supposed to be about? Sharing others' burdens. He made life fun because he shared himself with us. And we've had many throughout our time here at Pleasant Hill who have shared, and I can't even begin to name all the different things that have been done through the ancestors of our congregation. And one thing that is still going on, maybe you participated in a month or two ago, was when Carol and Betty, even though they weren't able to be here, they sent their tomatoes. And Dad being on the farm all through the years in the past, Carol and Dad, Betty would and Mom would have garden goods, and Dad even shared his mushrooms. So not very many people are willing to do that. But there's been good examples of our ancestors that have shared with us. And to think about the things that you can do as your projects in the fashion that Junior did. My mother is 89 years old, but she still enjoys writing to people. And I'm amazed every day how many letters and cards that she's got that needs to go in the mail. But she gets feedback from that about people being glad that she took the time to handwrite something in the computer age that we live in now that's foreign to a lot of people. And it gives Mom something that she feels like she can share with others. Joyce just recently had one of her students that came to the swim classes. Obituary was in the paper this weekend, and she had made an effort to go visit this lady and other people that she knows. And we know James, the first chapter, verse 27, reminds us that pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this: to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. And these things are just as valuable as somebody that has taken time to make a lesson, to do whatever is part of the church service, is no greater feat than the one-on-one things that you can do in encouraging somebody else to keep the faith. I miss Larry George, as he would get up here and say his personal prayers that he did. Thank you, Lord, that things are as well with us as they are. And being able to work with Larry for 4 years, it he goes across my thoughts quite often. I remember Desi that if she was probably able to stand up, she was going to be at church. She was very dedicated to trying to be here whenever the church doors were open. And I remember a business meeting with Desi as well, and the subtle way that she campaigned to get changes to the women's restrooms. And she wanted to know if it was realistic to think that those restrooms would be done before she died. And I think they did, didn't they? But that Desi was very diligent and maintained her beliefs, and she holds a special place in my heart about the impact that she's had on me growing up here within this congregation. And there's been those Dad used to make mention of the fact that the old will die and the young may die. And we had some that we planned on and some that we didn't this year. Audrey, being 99 years old, was one that we knew had had a full life. And yet, I wasn't ready for to go to Nelson's funeral. It just seemed like wasn't quite right that Nels would be gone, and Tom Woody being gone. And we can list all these people, and hopefully they had enough impact on us that we can truly say we miss them. I miss Carol and Betty, and they're not the nice thing about it is they're still here, and you can still be an encouragement to them. You can make them one of your projects. They would love for you to take a moment and share your time with them as they are unable to get out of their house as much as they would like to. That is something that you can do. to make them feel better is to share with them. And I've made mention before that life isn't always fair. I miss Clint Sparks. A lot of you probably didn't know Clint or get the chance to be with him as much as my family did. And how life isn't always fair. It doesn't seem to me like he deserved to die when he was 19 years old, or I think that's what he was. Where when I was 18, I deserved to die because of a mistake that I made, a bad choice that I made, but the Lord spared me. So why did life spare me and not Clint? I wondered if we had on our walls three categories of this congregation: our past, our present, and our future. The past being those that have gone on before us, are those that have made the present day possible. They educated us enough that we are here today. What about us here in the present? Are we educating those young ones that they will be here in the future? It is up to those of us here today that we must teach the scriptures to our young and to those that we interact with in our lives, to ground them in why we do what we do. Or this congregation will die out when the present group dies out physically. We must pass it on. We must share the gospel for the church to survive. You have to share what you know. And my dad's generation and Carol and Betty Warren's generation during the Depression, a lot of the corn was picked by hand. And it was stored in the ear. It wasn't shelled in the field by the big combines like what we have now. And the ear corn cribs, they would have slats in them. Or some of them were made out of boards. Some of them were made out of wire, just like a close-knit fence. So these ears of corn were exposed to let air go through them and dry them out. But it also made it real convenient with this outdoor storage type system that it made it pretty convenient for the varmints. And a lot of this was still going on when I grew up in the 1960s, and once or twice a year, you would hire a man that had a corn sheller, and he would bring this machine in, and you would run this ear corn out through this corn sheller, and you'd have one pile of shucks, you'd have another pile of cobs, and then you'd have the corn going in the wagon or the truck. Now, I have a man that I work with at the John Deere store that he's close to me in age, and he grew up on a farm up in northern Iowa, and we were, Rodney and I was talking to him one day, and we were talking about this, and he told me a story that I felt I should share with you. He was telling me when he was about 10 years old, he remembered the corn sheller showing up at their place, and it didn't make a very good impression on him as a 10-year-old. He said this dirty old man with farm overalls on got out of his truck, and he had baling twine from hay bales wrapped around the bottom of his pants, and just kind of looked like a dirty old man. And so Rick thought to himself, I wouldn't be caught dead dressed like that. And Rick's job that day as a 10-year-old was to get inside that corn crib and help shovel corn, rake corn into the conveyor. And Rick thought about this guy, and he says, that's kind of like the Scarecrow in the Wizard of Oz, if you ever remember how his boots and his pant legs were tied together with a string around the bottom of his pants. And so Rick was in there raking the corn in, and you know, when you have corn stored in that fashion, it's a good place for bumblebees to make their home. It's a good place for snakes to make their home. And it's a good place for mice and rats to make their home. And among other things. Now Rick uncovered either a mouse or a rat's nest while he was raking the corn, and the number one instinct that a mouse and a rat have for survival is, I've got to hide. And that's how they survive, is they don't make themselves visible. And Rick soon learned why the old man had his pant legs roped shut at the bottom of his ankles. This varmint made his way up inside Rick's pant leg, and he was halfway up his thigh when his brother reached over and grabbed his pant leg and stopped it from going any higher. Rick wore rope around his ankles the rest of the day. You know, because of this type of storage, it made making easy access to food for rats and mice. My dad's generation coined some phrases. Some of you may have used them and not even realized how they originated. How many of you have used the phrase, I smell a rat? It's not as common anymore because our society is not as agricultural based as it used to be. Back in the Depression, that's how people survived the Depression, is because they raised their own food. Well, another phrase that was morphed out of this was, I believe when things would get bad enough and the population of the varmints got too high, the father would say, I believe it's time for a rat killing. And that is another phrase that came from this type of life on the farm. And this phrase morphed into use into society somewhat by our older generation, where if someone had a problem or a mess of any kind, and it was time to clean house, it didn't matter whether he was talking about politics or somebody lying, the phrase would come up, I smell a rat, because you don't believe what you're being told. And it's time for a rat killing, to get it out in the open. Well, I believe this past week I missed out on an opportunity to make $10,000. Simply because I didn't have somebody videotaping my job site. And I had Junior on my mind because we were working two-thirds of the way up to Marshalltown, right along Highway 330. And we were working on this farm, and one of the things that we had to do on this job was we were digging a basement, and there was a chicken coop there that had a cement floor underneath the coop, and the guy wanted to save the building. So he put the building up on telephone poles, and we picked it up with the machines and moved the building off to the side, and the concrete was still there. And this man had had a problem. He'd killed a few rats before we had gotten there. And I told him, by the size of that floor, I said, and this was the day before, this was on Thursday, I told him, I said, I wouldn't be surprised, Derek, if there's 50 rats underneath that concrete when we tear it out. And so when we got the building moved off, it was time to break the concrete up. So I told him I would break it up into small pieces to where we could control how much we exposed at a time, because these rats are underneath the concrete living, so they're in pitch black darkness, and when they get exposed to sunlight, they just want to find a place to hide when the light hits them. And so Derek, my customer, he went in and got two shotguns and a pistol, and he gave one shotgun to Rodney. He had the other shotgun and pistol, and I had the excavator. So we were all armed. And he had never seen anybody use an excavator on rats before, but he did by the time we got done. But I pulled the first piece of concrete up, and the first three or four pieces that I pulled, there would be one, two, maybe three rats take off, and boom, boom, boom. And they just had a ball shooting. Rodney was going to go deer hunting yesterday, and he thought it'd be good target practice for maybe he could hit a deer if he could hit a rat. But after about the third or fourth piece, the next piece ended up being quite a bit bigger. And there must have been six or seven of them come out all at once. And the guys got excited trying to figure out which way to shoot, and both of their guns jammed. And here they are standing with about four of the rats took off running up the hill. And I took off with the excavator, and I stomped a couple into the ground. But I looked back at Rodney and this guy, and they were standing there, and they had four rats around them and looking for a place to go. And we had just got done talking about this story that I had told you about my salesman. And yet neither one of them tied their pant legs shut. And their guns wouldn't work. They didn't have a shovel with them. And so I turned around and looked, and here's these two guys doing an Irish jig, trying to stomp on these rats so they didn't run up their pant leg. And I had to stop for a minute because I couldn't operate the excavator after seeing what I was seeing. But then one of the rats runs towards me in the excavator, and I didn't want him getting in the excavator. And so I tried running the excavator, and Rodney was watching that rat, and it was just like he's on one of those exercise wheels. He got right on the inside of my track, and he just kept going around and around and around. But anyway, after we got all that done, we laid out 33 rats that we actually got out from under that floor. And there was four or five of them that run away when their guns jammed. But I've been thinking about this, and when people have their sins revealed, have their flaws revealed, it can be human nature for people to panic, just like these rats trying to find cover. And when people realize they've been revealed, it's easy to want to go hide and not face your flaws, face your sins. And some may even try to deny that it's true. And we have the story of David in the Old Testament of having to have the story put into story form for him to be able to see himself and the sin that he had committed. Now, what I'm about to tell you, I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me. I just want you to understand why I may have appeared to have changed in the past few years. I've allowed the events of life to quench a lot of my spirit because of problems of life. And I've also allowed people's spoken word to quench my spirit. When the economy collapsed 6 or 7 years ago, I lost all of my builders, which was over half of my income. And I was too old to start over, too old for anybody to hire me, so I diversified by buying some specialized equipment, which did keep me in business, but it left me unable to pay for both my equipment and my house. So nearing retirement age, I found myself unable to survive without somebody's help. And I had a couple of people help me. And so now I live in my mother's house, and I have a deeper appreciation for the verse that warns us of owing, having too much debt in our lives. My spiritual self may need all of you to play the part of Junior to help me regain the spirit that I allowed to be quenched. So if you want to make me your project and try and help me regain a better representation of Christ in my life, I welcome your efforts to help me better represent Christ, that I might be a more productive branch bearing fruit once more. You know, I have probably 10 different county plat books that I have to carry around because I have to call utility locates in for them. In my plat book I have for Polk County, it shows every road and every property owner in Polk County, and I think I've probably been on almost every one of those roads. We all go down different roads in life. And many times it isn't the road that we would choose to travel. And if life would give us a do-over, most of us would change choices we've made in our past. And I'd like to, for you to leave with this thought, that you be careful watching from a distance how someone else may seem to be erratic when they're driving down the road of life that they're going on. Perhaps you can be like Junior and keep them on the road. There are so many things you can do to keep the church strong without ever setting yourself behind this pulpit. The strength of the church is in the pews. And it's your interaction with each other that will help us face our problems successfully. And hopefully be like Junior and finish the course, finish the race, and get the prize when we're done. If there's something that we can do to help you this day to better represent yourself as a Christian, we give you that opportunity as we stand and sing.